Good morning, everyone. I think this is the brave group. It wasn't put off so much by the weather. But welcome, and welcome to everyone on Zoom. This is week four. What we're going to do, actually, we're going to do this topic today and next week, and then we're going to start the week after with another topic. We're going to do, because this term is very long term, so I decided to split into two, which I'll announce next week. So we've got two more weeks on this. So just a bit of review from last week. We talked about conversations to do with trust, and we discussed last week the idea of rebuilding trust when trust is broken. I shared with you a personal story that worked. That's why I shared it with you, and talked about some of those strategies and using what the Judith Glaser uses in her book. We talked about the five things: transparency, which is confronting, identifying the problem, identifying the current feelings between us, between people where trust has been broken, including the ability to even apologize when we need to. Relationship, acknowledging the goal, in other words, that the desire is, although it's not there presently, but the desire is to have a connection built on trust. Understanding, so spending time, investing time to really understand each other, which is part of the problem, why sometimes trust isn't there. Shared success, identifying the common gain, the common purpose, the common sort of goals which you both have. And then truth, just looking at the needs, looking at the red lines, looking at where you could cross and not cross, and so on and so forth. Also building the concept of empathy, which is critical to the concept of relationships, which we're going to talk about a bit later as well. Then we discussed something. She talked about the rituals of conversation, like the things that we do which make us feel more comfortable with the setting. The tone, the asking questions, letting go, which all have to do with letting go of our egos. We talked about at great length. And then at the end, I told you a story of Ashkacha Pratit, and I think I'm not going to tell a story again, but the message is very, very important, and that is that although conversations are sometimes hard work, and sometimes we think, like, why did I land up with this person? Why do I need to have a conversation with them? The answer is because it's good for us. And God put us there, even though it's hard, but it's for a purpose, and we become better people when we do that. Okay. So today, I wanted to have a look at some other components of conversations. And today, not necessarily so much from the book I've been using, but just general ideas. And first, what I want to do is just revisit the whole foundation of this whole idea, right? Because I just want to sort of clarify and emphasize maybe that I've been using examples and strategies from this book that I was reading, Conversational Intelligence. And in her book, Judith Glaser, she really is talking about conversations to do with leadership. I mean, she works with clients and companies and people in sales and the corporate world and so on. And of course, it doesn't have to be only in the business model, but it's also in just regular good leaders in all relationships, whether it's parents, teachers, leaders, even friends and so on, anyone in our circle of influence. But the truth is that all these ideas and the essence of conversation and the essence of good speech and positive words and positive communication is really something that is relevant to every conversation. Doesn't matter if it's a leadership conversation or not, it's really about every conversation that we have, if it's a conversation, right? I don't mean, when I say every conversation, I don't mean just, you know, someone asks you for a phone number, so you give them a phone number, although obviously that's a conversation too, and it's always important to be respectful, and every conversation can be good or bad, even if it's just giving a phone number. But I mean more of a conversation, where people socialize even, or whatever the case is, right? Because just to revisit the idea, which we've talked about in the past, that when the Torah says at the very beginning of Genesis, the very beginning of the Torah, and the Torah talks about the idea that God blew into the nostrils of Adam the neshama, the soul of life, right? And then it says it there, and I've shared this with you many times, it says, Vayhi Adam l'ruach l'nefesh chaya, and the person became a living soul. The Targum, the famous Unkelus, which was written Kabbalistically and with divine inspiration, translates it differently. Translates it as, Vayhi Adam, and the man became a speaking spirit, which is coincides with a concept that's brought down in Kabbalah, that the essence of the human being, the nefesh, as it says, the soul of a person, it says in Kabbalah, ha-nefesh mele'ah otiyot, the soul of a person is filled with words, meaning at our core, we have the concept of words and conversation. Why? Because the essence of the human being, right? This is one way to sort of, one way to put this. The essence of the human being is to grow and to connect to something outside of him or herself, right? Ultimately, to connect to God. But it's about growing in general. Growing in general means to go beyond ourselves. Now, we find this, I think we've mentioned this recently at some shiur, and I sometimes forget where I say what, so you'll forgive me if I said it here, but in Tanakh, we find a reference to the difference between angels and human beings. Angels are holier than us, without a question. They're more pure than we are, right? However, they are called omdim. They're called static, stationary beings. They don't grow. Angels have a personality, a spiritual personality. And whatever their personality is, that's what they are locked into. We have in Kabbalah this concept that they are angels of love, angels of fear, different types of angels, and however they are, they're very godly and pure and beautiful, but however they are created, they remain that way. And if they grow, it's only in the context of who they are. So it's not, it's incremental growth, maybe in the context of who they are already, right? Whereas human beings are called mehalchim in Tanakh. Referred to as those that walk, those that grow, right? Because the essence of a human being is to grow. I mentioned this last week. We're at a period now in the Jewish calendar, which is a period where emphasis, where personal growth is an emphasis, is an area of emphasis, the Omer period and so on. But generally, we're supposed to grow. We have this concept of going out of our personal Egypt every single day of the year, right? And what does growth mean essentially? Any type of growth means that we're willing to go beyond ourselves. And how do we go beyond ourselves? By connecting to what is outside of ourselves. So relationships is a part of growth. Because in order to have proper relationships, meaning not relationships where everything is done for our own benefit, because that's not a relationship, that's just a convenience, right? But true relationships is giving. True relationships is connecting to a world of another. True relationships is growing and expanding ourselves into the perspective and the world of other people for other things, and then ultimately a higher being, godliness, and so on, right? It means connecting, exploring, expanding into another's world. And all of that, the essential tool for that is dibur, speech. That's how we do it. Communication. Human communication that we've talked about many times, which means to be able to talk to another world, to connect to something outside of ourselves, right? Which means it involves the mechanics of conversation involves giving up our ego a little bit, putting ourselves to a side, but it also it happens and it's enhanced and it's created and nurtured through the concept of speaking, through the concept of conversation, right? And therefore, that is true with every conversation, because conversation, we said in the first lesson of this series, conversation, words connect. And therefore, every conversation that we have, which is a really important thing to think about nowadays, because nowadays, as we'll see a little bit later, the art of conversation has declined significantly, partly to do with technology, right? But people aren't having proper conversations. But every conversation we have to ask ourselves a question, or build it into our psyche to sort of be aware of this and be mindful of this and ask ourselves, is this conversation creating a connection? Am I learning from other people, right? Am I helping other people with this conversation? Am I going beyond myself, or am I building myself? That's very different. Is this conversation to build me, or what's to connect to something else, which ultimately will build me in a good way, but it's about connecting to someone outside of me, right? And am I just building connections, relationships, or am I building my ego and pushing my ego, right? Which often happens. That's often the purpose of a conversation. People have conversations because they want to be heard and they want to be recognized as being someone amazing, right? And this happens in all conversations. Now, you know, I've shared this with you before, but in Hebrew, this is a concept which comes from one of the Hasidic Rebbes of the Gerach Hasidim, the Sfat Emet, and he says that we find, we often need different conversations, right? So we find that there are three expressions that we find in Tanakh that are used for speaking. One is dibur, which is a reference to structured, direct conversation. Then there's amira, which means much more nuanced conversation, where you connect to someone through a body language, through It's not what you say, but like what you didn't say, what, you know, just the sort of the subtleties of conversation, right? And then there's something called sicha, which is like schmoozing, right? Now, the point of that is that all three of those words, all three of those conversations are necessary in relationships. Sometimes we need dibur, sometimes we need to be very clear with people, where we stand, what we expect, why we were disappointed, what we would need for an ongoing relationship, whatever the case is, and clarity is very important. Sometimes in that context, subtlety is not a good idea, right? You have to speak clear, right? You have to say things the way they are. Very often in conversation, but also at the same time, we need to be aware of our hidden conversations, of our body language conversations, of our communication, which is much more subtle, right? And then also the concept of that to build a relationship, we need the sicha, which is also something missing today. We need schmoozing, we need just to spend time. Not sharing information, not communicating necessary information, but just spending time, right? It's a separate conversation, but it's a very important thing. Another thing which is sorely missing today. People don't have time anymore. They don't spend time together in relations, whether it's parents and children, spouses, whatever the case is, right? It's one of my first questions when I ask people, when people come to me with a problem, I ask them how much time are you spending, right? Whether it's a parental problem, a spouse problem, whatever the case is. And from my little limited experience, I have to say that the answer is normally not good. That's the truth, and it's very sad, right? Okay, it's a side point. But what I wanted to bring out with this is that with all three of these conversations, even if it's dibur, even if it's a very clear conversation, even if it's instructional, a parent has to give an instruction to a child sometimes, a leader has to give instruction to a team. Whatever the case is, sometimes it's a very direct instruction. It's not complicated. It's just, this is what needs to happen. Even there, there's two ways of having the conversation. Even there, there's a question we have to ask ourselves, is this conversation connecting us or dividing us further away? It's how we say it. You can be absolutely clear, it can be dibur, it can be very clear and concise conversation, but there's different ways of having it. There's what you said before, there's what you said after, there's how you treat the person generally, does the person feel safe, does the person feel trusting, and so on and so forth. So I think it's always the same question with every conversation. What is this conversation going to do? Is it going to connect us or divide us? Essentially, is it going to achieve what conversation should achieve, which is to create connections, to create relationships, or is it going to create conflict or create tension or divide us more away, right? And that's an important thing. I saw someone write from somewhere, like a quote from somewhere, that's the only reason why we ask other people how their weekend was is so we can tell them about our own weekend, right? So, right? Because the point of this is that sometimes the same conversation can go both ways, either way. And a conversation doesn't naturally connect because people have very good antennas and they pick it up right away, right? You'll know. If someone asks you how your weekend is, you'll know exactly why, just the way they ask it. You'll know, are they asking because they're not interested in you, they just want to share their weekend, so it's a good segue in, or are they genuinely interested? And you're genuinely interested in them, right? That's a very, very important thing, right? I tell my kids, you know, my kids got married through the shidduch system, as we call it, right? Where dating doesn't go on for years, it goes on for a relatively short time. But there's lots of things you can pick up in that short time, right? So one of the things I always tell my children on their dates, and they come back to me and consult again, you know, because sometimes, you know, conversation was really good, it flowed really nicely. Interesting guy or interesting girl, whatever the case is. And one of my questions is, do you think he or she, depending if it's my son or daughter, are they interested in you? Like, because sometimes you can have a really good conversation and then if you think about it, like it was a one-way conversation, right? Mm-hmm. And that can happen. And it could sound very good and be very interesting at the moment. It doesn't make for a long, good-term relationship. But I always ask the question, do you feel that they, when you spoke, that they were genuinely interested in what you had to say? And were you interested in what they had to say? Because if you weren't, then it's not a good shidduch. Like, they obviously don't value the person. Right? But conversely, you need to feel like they're interested in what you had to say. So that's such an important thing to pick up on, right? Same thing we have, for example, the Talmud tells us a very famous concept. The Talmud says one of the great leaders of the Talmud, Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, the codifier of the Mishnah, he said, I learned a lot of Torah from my teachers. I learned more from my friends, umi talmidai yoter mikulam. And I learned the most from my students. Which is true. Teachers know that, that they learn a lot from their students, right? You would know that, I'm sure, right? Correct? You can verify the statement, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. However, it's not true with every teacher. It depends how they teach. You can only learn from someone, it doesn't matter who it is, if you're interested in them, right? You can have a teacher who's not a good teacher walk into a classroom and pontificate for an hour, right? Lecture for an hour. They're not going to learn anything from their students because they're not interested. You have to, if you want words, any conversation, whether it's instructional or social, any conversation, if you want it to be a connector, and in the case of this, if you want it to be a two-way street, because you can always learn from someone else, that's part of good conversation. Even when it's a conversation of giving, you need to know you can always learn from the other person. That's if there's a genuine interest to grow. Meaning to grow, to not always be focused on myself, not always trapped in myself, but to be genuinely interested in the other people. So a teacher, a good teacher, walks into a classroom and he's really interested in his or her students, interested in how they learn, interested in how they receive information, interested in how they feedback the information. They will learn lots and they will learn more. True, they will learn the most from their students. That is true. Exactly what Rebbe said. But it's got to be a certain type of teacher. It's got to be a teacher who's willing to have that conversation, the teaching conversation, the instructional conversation, in a particular way, right? So I just want to say, so that concept is the fundamentals of all conversations. Doesn't matter what kind of conversation it is. Incidentally, I was looking up the Talmud, I was looking up the source of where this is from, and I chanced upon an incredible commentary, so I'll just share it with you. It comes from the Ben Yohanyada, which was a Sephardic sage, the Ben Ishchai. He passed away in 1902. He was the very, very famed and revered teacher of rabbi of Baghdad in Iraq in the late 19th century and beginning of 20th century. Right? And so it's a little bit of Hebrew here. So if you don't quite get it, don't worry, but I'll try and share with you as best I can. So you know, every letter in Hebrew has a name, right? So for example, Aleph, a Bet, whatever. So if you see an Aleph, it looks an Aleph, you'll say, called an Aleph. But Aleph is a word, right? So we have what's called in Hebrew, Otiyot b'miluam, which means when you have a look at a letter, but you spell out the letter, right? So Aleph is a word which has a spelling. It's spelled Aleph, Lamed, Fe, right? Okay. So he says that when the Gemara talks about that I learned so much with my students, the word in Hebrew for learning is limud, to learn, right? Lilmud, which is the lamed of the aleph base, right? The word lamed means aleph base. And he says the interesting thing, that there are three letters, besides the lamed, there are three letters in the alphabet, only three letters, that if you spell them out completely, you'll also have a lamed in the complete spelling. Like aleph, right? Aleph spelled aleph, lamed, pei. Gimel, is spelled Gimel, Yud, Mem, Lamed, Gimel, right? And Dalet, which is spelled Dalet, Lamed, Yud, Tav. Those are only three letters that have a Lamed in their full spelling. What's the significance of Aleph, Gimel, and Dalet? It makes up the word Eged, which is group, connection, right? That when you learn or you teach, both come from the word Lilmod, Lelamed, it only works if you connect. Same idea. You've got to connect. You've got to be interested in the other person. The student has to be interested and want to learn from their teacher. The teacher has to be interested and want to learn from their student. So it's eged when there's the connection, when they come together. It's an amazing. This is very, very typical of the way he explains things. It's got a commentary in Chumash. What was that?
You said where they got the eged verse.
I don't know, maybe. Right. Okay. So in other words, like this. In other words, the concept of words, like we spoke about the very first session, words are very powerful. Words define, words create. The words are the most powerful tool a human being has. The problem with it is, it's so powerful that it can go either way. It either is going to destroy a relationship, divide people, create conflict and tension, the very same words, or it's going to create a connection, a depth, a relationship, a coming together, right? Which leads us to a very, very important concept, which is that we should never be afraid of words. On the contrary, we are called the medaber, we are called communicators, because we need to use words. We just, right? Like this isn't a recommendation to stop talking. Although silence is a good thing sometimes, but we have to communicate. That's who we are. Communication, without communication, we will never achieve what a human being is going to achieve, whether it's between people or between us and God even, right? We communicate with God. We have, like for example, we have the words of Torah and the words of prayer, which is always said as Torah is God talking to us, prayer is we talking to God. There's a communication going on, right? And that's all part of growing as a human being. But we just have to remember that words can be used both ways, and we have to make sure to use it in the correct way. Which leads me to a thought which I saw, which I'll share with you, an interesting idea, which comes out of the parsha of the week just a few weeks ago. A few weeks ago we had the parsha which focuses a lot about speech, because it's the parsha of Tazria Mitzorah, which is the parsha of leprosy, which we don't have today, but it's the punishment of leprosy which befell people in ancient times, and we are taught that it came because of Lashon Hara, right? And people gossiped and they spoke badly about other people, which is a very part of bad speech and destructive speech and so on. Then they would get the skin disease, they would have to go to a Kohen. The Kohen would then diagnose it, and if you diagnose it as Tzarat, then the person would have to be isolated for a quarantine, that's supposed to use modern language, for a certain amount of time. And the punishment of quarantine was exactly that the person who spoke Lashon Hara created division. He created isolation versus connection. So therefore the punishment is an impurity, a skin disease which is impure, which causes the person to have to isolate from others. Okay. The second part of that parasha, which is Mitzorah, talks about the purification process of the person who had leprosy. In other words, not just one day he wakes up and it's gone and then the person is pure and can rejoin the community. It's actually a whole process. So what happens is that when the person sees that the skin disease is cleared up, he goes to the Kohen. Okay. Kohen examines it, says, yes, it's cleared up. Now we've got to purify you because you were impure. Now we've got to purify you. So the purification process is a very cryptic process. It's one of these things that the Torah tells us we have to do that will cause the person to become pure, but it's got a lot of symbolism behind it. One of the things that has to happen is it's very part of a sacrificial process in ancient biblical sort of temple times. The person had to have two birds. They had to take two birds. Two birds with other things, certain plants and a vessel and so on and so forth. A spring water, and each one has its own symbolism. I'm just going to focus on the two birds. What were these two birds? One bird was slaughtered as an animal, as like a sacrifice. And part of it was dipped in the water with a hyssop branch, a whole thing. And the other bird, after there was a ritual done with that bird, was sent free. What's the idea? So Rashi brings over there, set free in the open field, right? So Rashi brings, what's the idea of a bird? So birds chirp a lot, right? So like chatter, right? So the idea of the bird was a reminder for the person that what got that person into this mess in the first place was negative, you know, prattle, chatter, babbling, like the babbling of the birds, the chirping of the birds, right? Okay, so that's a good reminder. Not only that, but the way birds chirp, like a parrot, for example, a parrot can just say, a parrot talks, right, for example. But a parrot doesn't communicate. It's a different, just repeats words, fragmented words, sometimes nonsensical words. It's sort of a symbolism for negative speech, right? So that's why the Torah says that part of the purification process has to be a reminder for the person that you use speech wrongly. You use speech like the birds chirp and you know, without meaning, without purpose necessarily. And therefore, that's why there's a bird and one of the birds was actually slaughtered. It was like a sort of, you have to get rid of the bad speech and so on and so forth. So why was the other bird sent free? The idea is also a reminder for the person that when you purify from the sin of negative communication, the idea is not to become quiet. That wasn't the idea. The idea is then to transform those words into something positive. So it's the two birds. The one bird that symbolizes the elimination of negative speech, and the other bird is the concept of letting it go free, transforming into positive speech. In other words, now go and use your language well. Go and use your language properly. I just don't know if I said this here recently, but I did show this to you many years ago, but I'll say it again just in case I haven't, because it's a very important concept. There's a thought, a beautiful thought from a great Hasidic Rebbe called the Ishbitzer Rebbe. I last number of years I've been studying his works because I discovered that I'm actually a descendant of his, so I thought it would be a good idea to see what he teaches. And he tells a story, a famous medrash, of a town where there was a great teacher called Rabbi Yanai. And in this town, there was a peddler. In ancient times, peddlers were very common. A peddler that came from a different town, and he was selling wares, he was selling stuff, right? And word got to Rabbi Yanai, this peddler is selling a very interesting product. The way the peddlers would work is they would go around the town and they would sort of advertise, they would broadcast their product, they would say, who wants to buy, I don't know, cosmetics, fruit, vegetables, whatever they were selling. This guy says, he's walking around town, he says, who wants to buy longevity? Longevity. So Rabbi Yanai sends his students out, he says, go and see what he's, like, I mean, like, what's the product? How much is the costing? What does it look like? Right. So they go out and he says, man bai chai, who wants to buy life? Who wants to buy longevity? So they go to him and they say, so what's longevity? What's the product look like? So he quotes a verse from Psalms, famous verse. He quotes a verse from Psalms, and the verse from Psalms says, mi ha'ish hechafetz chaim, who wants life? Who wants to live long? And the psalmist continues and he says, Netzar l'shan chamera, guard your tongue from speaking evil and your lips from speaking badly. In other words, don't talk about others, don't talk lashon hara, and preventing yourself from negative talk and destructive talk and putting on other people will bring the blessing of longevity. Right? Incidentally, before the war, there was a sage called the Chafetz Chaim, right? Because he wrote extensively on this topic and he was particularly very careful and he lived well into his 90s and he was known as the Chafetz Chaim because he emphasized this idea. Okay. So they went back and they told Rabbi Yanai, yes, the person was broadcasting that he's selling long life. And what's his secret? His secret was that he was explaining to people and sharing with people the message of the psalmist. And Rabbi Yanai was unbelievably impressed. So the Ishbitzer Rebbe asked the question, he says, this is ridiculous. Rabbi Yana knew the same verse in Tehillim as good as the peddler did, right? Like, what exactly did the peddler reveal and share that Rabbi Yana was so impressed with and maybe that he didn't know before? This is a very famous verse in Psalms. It's actually a verse that we say every Shabbat in Davening. And it's a very common concept. And yeah, I mean, it's good to be reminded. That's very good. It's always good to be reminded of these things. But what was amazing, what, you know, so the Ishbitzer says a beautiful thing. He says, if you look at the Medrash, it starts the story by emphasizing that the person who shared this was a peddler. The peddler in Hebrew is Ruchel. Ruchel, not like Rachel, but Ruchel spelled differently. Resh Vav Chaf Lamed. It's a peddler in Hebrew, right? If you look in the Torah, where the Torah talks about the prohibition of gossip, and particularly what we call Rechilut, which is like gossip, we're sharing one thing, you know, like you tell me something bad about so-and-so and I go and share, you know what so-and-so said about you, like, you know, to really create problems. It's the same word. The Torah says, lo telech rachil. Rachil is like a peddler. Don't be a peddler in your speech. Meaning, what's a peddler? A peddler is like a yenta, like right? Someone who is a what they call in Yiddish a kochelefel, right? It's a nature, a certain personality in a way, like a person who knows how to retrieve a juicy piece of information from A and then share it with B, right? Yeah. It's a peddler personality. Yeah? Not everyone can do it so well like others. Some people do it really well, some people don't do it very well, right? I mean, you know, if you want to know a really piece of juicy information, that's what you got to ask. You got to ask someone who has that personality, right? So, same word as a peddler. So the Medrash says that this person who came around to talk about this thing was a peddler. Now, what's the significance of it? So the Ishbitzer says like this. What happened, obviously, was this. This person, because a peddler is the same thing. He knows that buy one product from one town and sell a different town, the same sort of personality, if he's a good peddler. Right? Like a good salesman, exactly. So the Medrash says, who came to town was high Ruchel, was a peddler. What does that mean? Obviously, this person had the personality of a peddler. And maybe in his past experiences, that's exactly what he did. He was a negative peddler. He spoke rechilut. He spoke lashon hara, and he shared gossip from one to another, shared information, got information from A and shared it with B in a negative way, right? What did this person do? What was this person doing now? He was also being a peddler. He was coming and sharing and broadcasting the message from Tehillim, the message from the psalmist. And that's what impressed Rabbi Yanai. Rabbi Yanai learned from this something new, that it's not good enough not to talk. It's not good enough to stop. But on the contrary, If you're a big talker, if you're a peddler by personality, and a language peddler, it's not good enough to abstain, because it doesn't work. You've got to channel your personality, because speech is a powerful thing. The ability to talk and the ability to learn from one and share with the other is an amazing tool, just depending how it's used. So when they came back and they told him there's a peddler who's doing this, this is not that he knew the message, but what impressed him was the ability from that person to take a personality trait which could be used for the negative and transform it and use that very same trait for the positive. And that's what he did. He walked around and this person decided that he's going to channel his life, he's going to take his personality of being a ruchel, and instead of doing it negatively, he's going to do it positively. He is going to be the advocate. He's going to be the spreader of the message. Use speech well. Don't talk badly about your fellow. And so on and so forth. Right? Nice idea. Same sort of thing. Same sort of idea with the two birds. In other words, you have to eliminate the negative, but the bird is still a good tool. The chattering is still a good tool. Just got to use it well and transform it into positive. So what comes out of all of this is this idea. It's not only about leadership conversation, but every conversation. But every conversation, are we using it to connect or are we using it to separate? Are we using it to be more humble and learn from others, or are we using it to push our own ego? And because language is so important and so powerful, lots of things come out of this. For example, the importance of using positive language. Again, once we understand that language is so powerful, it's also what type of language do we use? Because negative language creates negativity. Positive language creates positivity. First, on a very basic level, it's about, you know, if you're around a person that's always talking negatively, the energy becomes negative. If you're around a person that talks positively, it's a positive atmosphere, right? But even on a deeper level, we know the negative language creates a negative energy, because language is a very powerful spiritual power. And negativity brings negative energy, and it puts us apart, whereas positivity brings us closer. I've shared this to you before, but the Lubavitcher Rebbe was hugely into this. He was so careful about not talking, not saying negative things to an extreme. Like he didn't like certain words in the English language. He would turn it around. Someone told him that he has to finish a project because he's got a deadline. He said, deadline's not a good thing to say. I've forgotten the replacement words, but I've got a goal or something. I've got a, I don't know, a timeline or something, whatever it was, right? And every time he would say something that could have a negative conversation, there was a person once that came and he was introduced to him, and someone said he comes from the Far East or something. So he didn't like the word Far East. He says, no one's far away. Far is like a negative thing. And I remember once, interesting, he did use the word far, but he clarified it. I remember it was interesting, actually. It was before I moved to Australia. I knew I was going to come to Australia already. But at the same time, it took a long time to get a visa. But at the same time, there were 10, I think 10, like, Bokharim, students that were coming. There was a yeshiva. They used to have a yeshiva up in Flood Street, and they had 10 students who were leaving New York. And they were coming here to spend a year or two. And at the Shabbos Fabrengen before they left, I was there in New York. I was living there at the time. And the Rebbe, in his talk on Shabbos, mentioned them. He gave them a special mention, the blessing for their trip and success and so on. And the way he started, he said, in Yiddish he said, there's a kvutza, there's a group of people here that they're going to a place which is rachok begashmiyut vekarov beruchaniyut. He said it's far physically only, but it's very close spiritually. He was speaking about Australia. So the Rebbe referred to Australia as a, because everyone's from Australia, end of the world. He said, yes, Australia is a place that is far, but only far physically, but close spiritually. That's what he said about Australia. But he was very, 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 very extreme. Like he would, even when he had to say something negative, like he never said death, he would always say the opposite of life. that kind of thing. Or he would say if someone was acting, he wanted to talk about an incident or something where someone acted really, really badly, he would say the person acted in the opposite way of Ahavat Israel. Right? He wouldn't say the like with hatred, or he never was very, very careful. And also he had a very big focus on how he had a big campaign, which he wrote about. He wrote about the medical people, and he spoke to medical people about it, that in modern Hebrew they should not call hospitals Bet Cholim. Right? Bet Cholim means a house of sick people.
Yeah.
He had a whole campaign that should change it. They should call that. He would for sure refer to it as that. He should say they should call it Bet Refuah, house of wellness, a house of healing. And he said, he was so particular that he said that, I'm just giving you an example of how careful, you know, I mean, that's an extreme, and he was at a certain level, but like just how language can have an effect was he wrote to a doctor, he says, okay, in English it's called hospital, but he said, if you go, like a person in Israel who goes to a hospital and then everyone talks about him going to a Bet Cholim, the psychological impact is negative, right? He knows where's he going. He's going to hassle sick people. Like it's not a good thing. And nowadays we know, particularly more recent research, that the psychological mindset of a person who's not well is extremely important. We know that it contributes to physical wellness, physical wellness. Right? Whereas if the emphasis is you're going to a Bet Refuah, even though you're going, it's the same place, it's the same machines, it's the same doctors, but it's the words that are used that make such a difference, right? Lots of examples of that. Part of making a good conversation, of course, is the idea of empathy. We spoke about this before. Nowadays, there's research to tell us that technology has brought a reduction in empathy because people are so into themselves. They don't notice what's happening with others, right? I'll just read to you a beautiful little story that Rabbi Sacks writes in one of his articles where he talks about empathy. He quotes an academic. He tells a story like this. He says, a young American living in Japan who was studying there was sitting one afternoon in a train in the suburbs of Tokyo. Right? The carriage was half empty. There were some mothers with children, elderly people going shopping. He says, one of the stations, the door opened, a man staggered into the carriage, shouting who was drunk. He was obviously drunk. Dirty, aggressive. Started cursing at people and lunged at one woman who was holding a baby. The blow hit her. He jumped and he was running to the other end of the carriage. The anger of the drunk who went after them, grabbing a metal pole. And it was a dangerous situation and this young person got ready for a fight. Before, however, he could sort of get up and start fighting, a small elderly man in his 70s, dressed in a kimono, it's a kimono, Japanese something or other, right? shouted and he said, what's that?
Elderly, 70.
I'm just reading the article. No, young. But you're right, language, right? A young man in his 70s. Older than the young guy, put it that way.
Right. Older than the young guy.
Yeah, older than the young guy. So he shouted, hey, to the drunk in a friendly way, come here and talk to me. So, it shocked the drunk guy. He came over and he said to him in a trance, why should I talk to you? Well, have you been drinking? Asked the man. Oh, sorry, what have you been drinking? And the guy said, I don't know what this is. You'll excuse my ignorance. Sake? What's sake?
Sake?
It's a Japanese?
It's a Japanese.
Oh, okay. That's good. Wait. That's what he was drinking. Okay. I don't need to add another alcohol drink to my repertoire. That's good. I'll leave it. So the guy said, sake, and it's none of your business. So the guy says, oh, that's wonderful. You see, I have sake too, every night, me and my wife. She's 76. We warm up a little bit with a bottle, and we take it into our garden. We sit on the old wooden bench. We watch the sun go down. We look to see how the tree is doing. My great-grandfather planted the tree. He just starts talking to him like a father. And as he continued talking to him, the drunk's face began to soften, and his fist slowly unclenched. Yes, he says, I love persimmons too. That's the tree. And I'm sure, he said, you have a wonderful wife. No, replied the drunk, my wife died. Gently began to sob. I don't go. Oh, sorry. This was the drunk guy said. The old man said to him, I'm sure you have a wonderful wife. He said, no, my wife died. I don't go home. I don't have a job. I'm ashamed of myself. And so on and so on. The point of the story is, says, as the train arrived at the student stop, he was leaving the train, he heard the elderly man sighing sympathetically, my, that's a difficult predicament. Sit here and tell me about it. And the last glimpse he had of that aggressive drunk was the drunk was sitting with his head in the old man's lap and the old man was stroking his hair, right? And he goes into a whole article that, obviously, I mean, don't do this at home. It doesn't always work with an aggressive drunk on a train, but the point is that sometimes words with empathy can diffuse conflict. It can calm things down, can create relationships, right? We often are our own worst enemy when it comes to situations of tension where we use the wrong words. We come in ready to fight and we exacerbate the situation rather than calming it down, rather than diffusing it, because we don't really understand the people that we're talking to. Because empathy, which really means understanding the situation of the other, noticing what the other is feeling, is an critical introduction and foundation to a good conversation, right? Which goes back to the parsha that I spoke about just earlier. I said that when a person gets the skin disease, right, it says, v'huva el ha-kohen, he has to go to a kohen. A kohen has to diagnose it. So there's a very interesting verse, and we know, just to give you context, that every word in the Torah is very exact. And here there seems to be an unnecessary repetition, right? It says you should go to the Kohen, and the Kohen should examine the disease, should examine the plague, right? It said, V'ra'a ta'nega, you should look at the nega, which means the plague. Afterwards it says, V'ra'a oto ha'kohen, the Kohen should look at him, and then decide if that is tzarat, if it's leprosy, and declare him impure, right? So why is that extra bit? It says you should look at the plague, then it says look at him. What does that mean? The commentaries explain a beautiful idea. And it's a basis for lots of different conversations. There are conversations that we have in life which are hard. Sometimes we have to criticize someone. Sometimes we have to point out a deficiency of someone. Like this Kohen who has to declare this person impure. The Torah is telling us that if you ever have to declare someone impure, and we do, we have to put someone in their place sometimes, you can never do it just by looking at the plague, just by looking at the weakness. You also first have to look at the person. You have to understand the person. So the Torah says it's not enough for the Kohen to just look at the nega, at the plague. V'ra'ah oto ha-Kohen. You have to look at him, understand him. Why does he come to this predicament? Why is he in this mess to begin with? What's his background? How did he get there? And then you can deal with the plague. And sometimes it's dealing with it harshly, sometimes not. But whatever the case is, but before you can make a decision, before you can be that kind of person who's going to focus on someone's shortcomings, you can't just look at the shortcoming. You have to look at the person. You have to look, the Kohen will look at him, the person, the depth of the person, what's behind him, what's going on in his consciousness, in his subconsciousness, in his background, his emotional health, everything. Understand the person before you pass judgment. It's a beautiful little idea. So, I'm sorry?
They used to put a sign on the home.
No, but it was publicized. It wasn't a nice thing to go through. Okay. So I want to just share with you. The leprosy we're talking about is a spiritual sickness. It wasn't actually leprosy.
Yeah, I mean, how do you differentiate if they've both got skin rashes?
No, because the trial is very specific of how the skin rash develops and what it looked like and the signs of spiritual leprosy. And it's not something that we even have today. Like it doesn't happen no more. I mean, we have a concept called leprosy, but it's not that. It has to be special shade and how it spread or didn't spread, and it was checked and examined after a week, and it's a very complex process of law that used to take place at that time. And if it met a bunch of different criteria, then it was a sign of the spiritual leprosy.
But having a medical mind, that seems to say, and maybe just had an allergy.
Yeah, no, but the Torah just says that God would ensure that if it happened in a very particular, specific way, then Torah would say that it's a sign of something. Otherwise, it wouldn't develop that way, presumably. Yeah. So I came across something I just want to share with you. It sort of puts together a little bit of what we're speaking about and adds a few more things. A great TED Talk, maybe some of you saw this TED Talk, was a few years ago, from a journalist called Celeste Headlee. She then, you can check it out, it's a beautiful little thing. And then she wrote actually a book afterwards about conversations. But she did a beautiful TED Talk on her 10 rules for conversations, right? Which I'll go through with you. But she said something interesting in the beginning. She says that there was a Pew Research that did a study of 10,000 American adults. And they found that at this moment, we are more polarized, we are more divided than we've ever been in history. Right? We're less likely to compromise, which means we're not listening to each other. We make decisions about where to live, who to marry, and even who our friends are going to be based on what we already believe. We don't listen, we don't learn, we don't explore. Right? And of course, she says a lot of it, as we said before, is due to technology. And according to another Pew Research, about a third of American teenagers, probably more now, this is like 10 years ago, right, send more than 100 texts a day. And many of them, almost most of them, are more likely to text their friends than they are to talk to them face to face. Right? It's an unbelievable thing. I'll never understand this. Right? I've been told that it's an old thing, it's old fashioned to make a call. I said, why don't you find out from this person like what they're going to do? I said, no, we don't phone, we text today, right?
I've seen people sitting at a table and they're texting each other.
Yeah. Yeah, no, 100%. Yeah. 100%. Because you know what it is? Because texting is the exact opposite of the conversation we've been talking about, right?
Yeah.
Texting means I just share with you something that I have. It's broadcasting a signal that's in my mind, but I'm too scared or I don't want to or I'm not interested in connecting with you and understanding what you have to say and how you're going to respond and how you're going to take my message and picking up on the signals and making contact and so on and so forth, right?
But the message is often misunderstood.
Correct.
As well.
Correct.
As well.
That's right. Because to have a message properly understood, you have to connect.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not saying, I mean, technology is a wonderful thing and it's a great creation of God, and we use it, if we use it well, it's fantastic. So are texts. I mean, sometimes you can't get hold of someone, you just need to share, you know, I'll see you at a certain time or I'm running late, whatever the case, that's beautiful, right? And sometimes it's just a convenience, but it doesn't breed communication, and certainly doesn't breed connection, right?
Can also, Rabbi, may I just add, people have committed suicide because of the texting and the Lashon Hara on...
Yes, that's a whole nother, yeah, that's, you're right, but that's, and that's, I mean, that's online bullying and online, yeah, that's shaming, that's a terrible thing. But even just generally day-to-day stuff, right, that we get over-involved in, it's an incredible thing, it's an incredible thing. People literally text someone in the next room, like it's unbelievable, well, the same table as you say, which is unbelievable, right? So she says, I came to realize that conversational competence might be the single most overlooked skill we fail to teach. Right? I think nowadays it's got to become a curriculum. It's got to become a subject, right? So she goes through her 10 basic rules. I'm just going to walk you through them because it's put very nicely, right? She says, so I have the 10 basic rules. I'm going to walk you through all of them. But honestly, if you just choose one of them and master it, you probably enjoy better conversations. So the first one is don't multitask, right? In other words, either have the conversation or don't have the conversation, right? But if you're having the conversation, we spoke about this when we talked about relationships and mindfulness, be present, right? Be present. It's hard. It's not always easy, by the way, because sometimes we are distracted. Human beings get distracted, right? I'm not going to tell you I'm not guilty of this, but I'm sure you've had this conversation. You've had this thing where you go to a social function and someone talks to you, and while they're talking to you, they're looking at other people, right? Because they want to know what's going on, right? So decide. You want to have the conversation or you want to know what's going on. But you want to explore the room? Explore the room. You want to have a conversation? Have a conversation, right? But be present. Don't.
Some people are very proud of the fact that they multitask so well.
Yes, and multitasking, by the way, is good sometimes. Everything has a place in life, right? Multitasking also has a place. But multitasking is probably not a good idea when you're talking to someone, especially if you're having a conversation with them, right? Because it, but when we talk about being present, it doesn't only mean not multitasking. It also means not trying not to be distracted by the argument you had with your boss, the conversation you had with someone yesterday. Right? Sometimes we get distracted because we're thinking about other things, right? And I think we've talked about this before, but sometimes it's worth telling a person, look, I'm actually very distracted at the moment. I mean, I really want to talk to you. In fact, I really want to listen to what you have to say. But I don't think I'm going to be able to now. I don't think I'm going to give it my fullest. So I need you to know that, right? And maybe the person will say, well, I want to tell you anyways. I don't mind if you half listen. Unlikely, but maybe they will. Maybe they say, okay, let's leave it. I'll leave for a different time, right? Okay. Number two, she says, don't pontificate, right? Engage. If you're having a social conversation, right? People often lecture when they, you know, and it's so bad and I've got to tell you and I think it's really important and this is what you should do and... I like to think I'm a person that tries to learn from other people, but I have to be honest and say when a person starts conversation, you know, I need to tell you what you need to be doing. I kind of switch off.
Exactly.
Because it's not a conversation. Like, I didn't ask you for advice. And you know. However, if you say, like, you know, this is the thing, ask a question, come back. If there's a conversation, you're much more likely to be open, right? Because, as she says, you need to enter every conversation assuming that you have something to learn. Right, people who pontificate basically don't think they have what to learn, they just have what to share. And that's a bad conversation. She says, she quotes from someone that says, everyone you ever meet knows something you don't. Everyone's an expert in something, a true expert in something, and we have what to learn, right? Which goes to number three, and number three is what we spoke about last week, use open-ended questions. And sometimes in a conversation, especially when you're supporting someone, the more open-ended, the better. Like, instead of saying, like, were you scared, assuming that they were scared, say, well, how did it feel? It's very different, right? Now, not always that's appropriate. I'm just saying, but asking questions, leaving a space for people to go either direction is good because it makes people safe, it makes people want to share. If I ask a question which already assumes something, that means I've already judged the situation, I've already assumed that you're in a particular box, and maybe you're not there, which will automatically clamp you up because you won't want to share because you can see I'm not on the same page as you. Right? Number four says, go with the flow. It's a nice tip. Right? Conversations don't have to end up how you think they were going to end up. Go with the flow, see where it's going. Read the signs, right? See what the nuances are. How it needs to develop. Read the situation. I think I've shared with you many times this law in halacha about comforting a mourner, right? That when you go to visit someone who's in mourning, technically you're actually not supposed to start the conversation. You have to let that person start the conversation. Why? Because you don't know what they want to talk about. Maybe that day they've just shared so many stories about their father that they just want to take a break there and talk about the weather. Often people do. They've had enough. They want to just take a break. Or no, maybe they really want to share about the family. Maybe they want to talk about other. You need to gauge. You need to be able to see and let it go. Don't have a program. Don't have a curriculum of the conversation and decide this is how it's going to go, right? Number five is a good thing. This actually is rooted in a piece of the Talmud, but it's a really important thing. If you don't know, say you don't know, right? Which the Talmud says that we learn this from Moses. I'm not sure if the TED Talk presenter knew this, but we learn this from Moses. Moses came, and he actually did know, but he medically didn't know in a particular situation. He said that the plague of the firstborns is going to happen around midnight. He said, when is it going to happen? Around midnight. Even though God had said it's going to happen at midnight. Why did he say? Because he was worried that he'd get caught out. He'd worried that the experts, Pharaoh's experts, the astrologers, wouldn't have their clocks set properly. Whatever their clocks were in those days. And they were carrying my eyes. You see, you were wrong. God was wrong. He said midnight and it wasn't. It was 5 past midnight, right? So the Talmud says, by extension, like, don't get yourself caught, because then you have to be dishonest and you have to lie, right? Sometimes people do this. They offer information when they don't know the information. Then they get caught. Then they have to cover up. Then they make another line and it piles up, right? So it says there, Lamed lishoncha lomar eini yodea. Teach your tongue to say, I don't know. It's okay to say, I don't know. Okay, say, it's not my area of expertise. I don't know. I'll find out for you if I need to. I'll look into it. I'll try, but right? Okay. Number six, and I suppose this is particularly in a sort of a supportive role when you're supporting someone, a very important thing. Don't equate your experience with theirs. Someone fetches to you, they want to unload, they want to share a pain. The worst thing to do is says, yeah, you know, I had a similar thing last week. Not a good idea, right? Because your pain is not their pain. It's different. Understand them. Focus on them. Ask them how it felt for them. Your pain is your pain. You can learn, of course, from your own experiences, but that kind of thing, people do this often, but it's not such a good idea. Number seven, try not to repeat yourself too many times. It's condescending. It's boring, right? So if you get your point across, sometimes, I mean, I'm sure everyone's had this experience, you want to tell someone, I got the point, right? I got it. You don't have to say it again. I mean, sometimes you say it again, a different way, a little bit, just for repetition's sake, but like, some people keep reporting the same thing, you know? Okay, I got it. So I got it the first time, right? Number nine is the most obvious one, obviously. She said it's not the last one, but it's the most important one, is listen. And we've talked about this many, many times, right? Listening is the hardest thing to do, and it's the most important part of a conversation. The Perkei Avot, the ethics of the father, says that the best thing for a person is shtika, is to be silent. And of course, it doesn't mean not to talk, because talking is a very important thing. But silence is a part of communication. It's really getting to know the other person. And listening means not to be thinking about what you're... As Stephen Covey said, that most people listen with the intention of replying. But you have to listen with the intention of listening. To really understand the other. Really understand the other person.
Rabbi, they say you have 2 ears and 1 mouth. You could use them in that.
Right, exactly, exactly. Very, 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 very good. Very good. There's a Hasidic saying, actually, which says the following. It says, there's three types of conversations. The first type is where everyone talks and no one listens. Then there's one that's not bad, which one person talks and others listen. And then there's a really good form of conversation where no one talks and everyone listens. Right? You know, sometimes just people have to listen to each other, right? Yeah. And then the last one, she says, is... where's number 10? I lost it. I think it's... Oh, yes. Be brief. Like, get to the point, say what you need to say, and be brief. And it says, all of these things, she says, boils down to one thing. When you have conversations, all these rules come down to one thing. Be interested in other people. If you're interested in other people, you'll connect, you'll learn, you'll explore, and automatically all these things will automatically come. Have a good day.
Thank you.
You're welcome.